The Holy Gospel according to Luke, the 18th chapter. Then Jesus told them a parable about their need to pray always and not to lose heart. He said, in a certain city there was a judge who neither feared God nor had respect for people. In that city there was a widow who kept coming to him and saying, "Grant me justice against my accuser." For a while he refused, but later he said to himself, "Though I have no fear of God and no respect for anyone, yet because this widow keeps bothering me, I will grant her justice, so that she may not wear me out by continually coming." And the Lord said, "Listen to what the unjust judge says. And will not God grant justice to his chosen ones who cry to him day and night? Will he delay long in helping them? I tell you, he will quickly grant justice to them. And yet, when the Son of Man comes, will he find faith on earth?" The Gospel of the Lord. Shortly before I retired from full-time parish ministry, I signed into my Social Security account. I wanted to be sure that everything was in proper order before I filed for my retirement benefits. And everything was not in proper order. Since the last time I had checked my account, someone had increased the amounts that I had reported as income for six consecutive years during the late 1990s. Now, being a basically honest human being, except when my golf ball lands behind a tree, I decided to correct this baffling addition of money. I also wanted to avoid any request from Social Security years down the road asking me to return the money with interest and perhaps penalties as well. So over to the Social Security office in Carlisle I went with all the paperwork necessary that any reasonably intelligent person would need to correct the error, including copies of my IRS Schedule C's that listed my correct income for the 6 years in question. After patiently waiting for several hours to correct their mistake, I was called to the counter to tell my story, offer my evidence, plead my case to an uninterested man, and receive assurances that he would look into the matter and that I would receive a notification through U.S. mail in a few weeks. And as promised, in a few weeks I received a letter from Social Security in my mailbox. Expectantly, I opened the envelope, and there it was, my hoped-for response. I was somewhat less than pleased to find that instead of recording the correct amounts of my income for the 6 years in question, all of the income for those 6 years had now been deleted. And so I returned to Social Security, that office in Carlisle, patiently waited for a few hours for my turn at the counter, told my story, including their unjust error in trying to correct their first error, submitted the growing pile of paperwork, and was assured by the uninterested young lady with whom I spoke that she would look into the matter. And as I was leaving, she said, "Well, to tell you the truth, this is really an Internal Revenue Service problem. You should be contacting them." And I did contact the IRS when I got home, and they couldn't find my records for the years in question. And I did receive another letter from Social Security repeating the second error they had made. And I did make a call to the uninterested young woman at Social Security, told her my story of increasing woe. And she informed me that nothing else could be done, at which point I informed her that I was going to hire a tax attorney and that I was coming after Social Security and I would never relent until I had justice. Or words to that effect, you can imagine. About 5 minutes after that call, the young lady called me back and she was in tears, obviously having spoken with someone a little higher up the chain of command. She apologized for how things had been handled and assured me that everything would be set right. About a week later, I received a perfunctory letter that corrected all errors. Actually, there was one additional error. I was now being given a penny more for the 6 years than I had earned or reported. I can live with that. Perhaps someone at Social Security has a sense of humor. A sense of humor can be somewhat therapeutic when life throws struggles our way. When we are aggravated in circumstances that are beyond our total control, that are unjust, that cause us to question trusted institutions, friends, family members, and even God, what are we to do? Now, I have told you this lengthy story this morning about my woes, not for the purpose of discouraging trust in institutions. The vast majority of people who work at institutions of all sorts are simply human beings trying to make a living and who sometimes make mistakes. And our society needs them, and they generally merit a goodly measure of our trust and support. Neither do I desire to simply hold up before you the virtue of persistence in the cause of justice for oneself or others as the ultimate purpose of our lives. Though we certainly do God's will when we are persistent in pursuing and praying for justice for all people, often in such manner a righteous result is achieved. Rather, first impressions aside, the parable Jesus tells us this morning is empathetic about entering the blessing of God in the midst of human struggles. The story of the widow and the unjust judge is not about the need to keep knock, knock, knocking on heaven's door to awaken a sleepy God or Social Security office to our needs. Conventional religiosity reduces this story to the need for persistent prayer. Prayer and the need to pray without giving up is a characteristic of the Gospel of Luke. But the widow in Jesus' parable reveals the strength and justice God continually gives in the intimate relationship of prayer. It's not about just persistence. The parable sounds like it is meant in part to be humorous, and it is. The widow keeps at the judge who neither feared God nor had respect for people. His disregard for the widow marks him as one who disdains God, since God is on the side of the alien, the fatherless, the widow. She is so persistent that the judge's words literally translate, "She will keep coming and end up giving me a black eye." The language conjures up the image of a bag lady banging the judge over the head with her packages. He cares nothing for the widow or for justice. He's simply concerned with his own comfort and reputation, and so he relents and he gives her justice. Here, Jesus uses an unsavory character to reveal the nature of God's kingdom. The import is clear. God's reign is the exact opposite of the unjust judge. God's beloved will not be disregarded. The Holy One is patient with them, will hear their cries, will answer them. God will answer the prayers of those who call upon divine grace for deliverance and justice. However, Jesus' words may ring hollow to a church, to an individual suffering hardship, wondering if their present time of struggle will ever end. It is easy these days, as always, to cite examples of those who cry for justice and deliverance from external or internal oppressions, but seemingly to no avail. One need only think of the unrelenting horror of the war in the Middle East over these past 2 years, and the prayers of the people on both sides of the conflict. When there is a delay in deliverance, when the Son of Man then comes, will he find faith on earth? Can people continue to have faith in God when their pleas seemingly go unanswered? That, and not mere persistence is what this parable is all about. In our first reading for today, Jacob arrives at Jabbok filled with fear. The story is very ancient, perhaps you can recall it. Middle Eastern folklore holds numerous stories of river demons or spirits that prevent crossings. Typically, they're very active during the night, but at daylight, they seem to disappear. At Jabbok, Jacob seems to confront one such being as he struggles anxiously with his past, especially his lying and cheating ways in relation to his father, Isaac, and brother Esau. And this powerful fellow is on his way to meet him. It's time for fear. The last time Jacob encountered Esau was after he cheated his elder brother out of his blessing and birthright and had to flee for his life. Now Esau, armed and dangerous, is coming to meet Jacob's party. Jacob sends rich gifts from his herds and flocks ahead of him to appease Esau before they meet. He has become a wealthy man during his exile, acquiring wives and children and vast flocks through various, sometimes very deceitful, means. Jacob stays behind to pour out his heart in fearful prayer for God's steadfast love and faithfulness, begging God to deliver him from his brother and keep the divine promise to bless and prosper him. Then comes his night of struggle, but it is not with Esau or his checkered past. The struggle is with God, represented in the form of a man in the story. Jacob wrestles all night, seeking the blessing he needs to face his future. The struggle with God results in a change of identity for Jacob. No longer is he Jacob, but Israel. That will be his name. He has a new mission. Cunning Jacob becomes the father of God's chosen people who fall under God's protection and have a special purpose in history. Their destiny is to carry the identity of their ancestor Israel, who strove with human beings and God, and we are told, prevailed. Jacob is less triumphant about the outcome of his struggle. While his night opponent says Jacob prevailed against God, Jacob says he has seen God face to face, and yet my life is preserved. He limps into his future, wounded, yet knowing God as the source of his identity and mission. No longer the deceitful schemer who lives by his razor-sharp wits, he now is one who struggles with God constantly and finds in the struggle divine blessing and purpose that will carry him and those who follow him into the future. He has met God in his struggle, a meeting that leaves no one unchanged. Prayer is like that for us. It is a meeting with God, a meeting that leaves us changed in some way. It is our conversation with God, much like a child might have a conversation with father or mother. It's a struggle in which we do not always seemingly get what we want and may be injured in the process. It requires us to see and strive towards the promise that is set before us. Otherwise, we will become nothing more than the self-absorbed judge who fears neither God nor anyone else. Through prayer, we can experience forgiveness, love, and justice. And with much struggle, mature in our relationship with God and the faith that God has entrusted to us. If this is not the result of prayer for us, then we do not yet know what prayer is.